Today I can actually say happy Epiphany, everyone.
Yes, happy Epiphany.
It's actually Epiphany.
It is.
The time when those Magi visited the Christ, therefore becoming the first Gentiles to hear the gospel.
Or to see the gospel.
Yeah.
At that point, the gospel was just kind of like, wah.
The gospel was just pooping on itself.
Yeah. Drool, yeah, a little vomit, maybe.
Yes, a little spit up. Joseph was like, I don't know what to do.
That would actually be a great way to kind of orient and present the gospel, I think.
It's definitely a step up from God loves you and has a wonderful plan for your life. There's always been a ring of, like,
you know, hashtag gospel poop.
Yeah.
Hashtag baby vomit.
Hashtag self-defecation. Anyhow, speaking of shit, we have lots of shit to talk about. Yeah, but first, really, we'll introduce ourselves.
Or maybe not at this point.
Why? Yeah. I'm Mark Van Steenwyck. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. And I was thinking about the number of our episode today. I was like, at first I was thinking, you know, it'd be really cool if this had been 150, right, happening on Epiphany, on coup day, coup d'etat.
Coup d'etat.
But then I was like, well, no, actually, you know, 149 is kind of a cool number. So 1 + 4 + 9 = 14, which is 7 × 2. Mm-hmm. So that's two perfect numbers. So, and numbers of wholeness. So that's kind of neat. And then 4 + 1 = 5, and 5 + 4 = 9. So that also has some really nice kind of symmetry and wholeness to it.
Mm-hmm. And if you add up the numeric value for the word episode plus 149, you end up with a number that's somehow significant.
Nice try, Mark.
Blows your mind, right? Adam wants to know if you're a numerologist, Daniel.
Sure. Apparently. Yeah. I mean, it's numbers. Numbers are great. So
numbers are what power robot birds. It's all programming. Programming numbers. But we're talking about a couple numbers, four, 1877 today. Those are numbers also, Dan and I were talking about it. Like, Reconstruction is one of the periods of history I think it's purposefully most Americans know nothing about. It was an astonishing time. So after the Civil War, and we've talked about this before, there was an explosion of black power. Like, you had black senators, black congresspeople, black mayors, black business. It was this amazing time that all of a sudden, Southerners in particular, but Northerners too, wanted to contain. Like, oh no, we didn't want things to get that much better that quick for these formerly enslaved people. And so Reconstruction was this potential. Like, we could have, who knows where things could have gone if we would have leaned into Reconstruction. There's all kinds of justice initiatives happening, but then there was a reaction. This is where the Klan emerges, all this sort of stuff as a pushback, and leading up to this election of Rutherford B. Hayes, which was a contested election, right?
Wasn't really contested. I mean, Tilden won. Yeah. So the Democratic candidate won.
But people contested it.
Right, but people contested it.
Kind of like what we have now.
Yeah, and what happened was the Secretary of War basically said, we're not going to allow this president to be seated. And they did have, you know, federal troops out in Washington. And So the Congress had to get together to basically overturn the will of the people and make a, quote, compromise. And so this is one of these things, you know, I was saying before the episode to Mark, that, you know, the number of people that I have seen saying in response to what is going on and in response to Trump's, you know, coup attempt and all the people that are joining him, everybody's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. This has never happened before. This is the worst thing. The United States has always been so wonderful, and now I can't believe what's going on.
In the myriad years of the great experience that is America, we have never known such taint. Like that kind of way of thinking always marvel to me.
and I'm just, you know, I hear these things, and I really do kind of wonder what is exactly going on there, because, you know, not only has this sort of thing happened before, but this sort of thing has happened many times in different ways. And this is a very common thread. Again, building off of what we were talking about yesterday in terms of the 16th century and conquest and colonialism. I mean, once you commit as a society to this idea that, you know, well, our main objective is to gain power and money and to do that by violence. Mm-hmm. That's the main point of everything, right? We don't care if people are starving. We don't care if we have plagues. We don't care if we have injustice. I mean, once that becomes your basic mode, then that's just what you keep doing. And so in this way, this is not only is this not anything new, but this is actually the norm.
This is the norm.
Yeah. And that's what's very hard, I think, for us to admit. To me, that feels like the crux of what's really difficult to acknowledge.
Yeah. And so in the 1876 elections, Hayes lost, but the Republicans, who were at that time the good guys, relatively speaking, wanted power so much that in order to get their guy in, they were willing to say, okay, South, we're gonna pull the federal troops out of the South and let you have at it. So they basically, you know, threw Black America under the bus to maintain power. Now, maybe I'm cynical, but it's hard for me not to see the similar pattern now. Like already, we have people like, so we had these very close elections, these, you know, runoff elections in Georgia. Democrats barely winning. Mm-hmm. So that gives them this kind of an equal balance in the Senate. The Democrats have the House and now the presidency. Now, this would be the time when one might say, we need to push and push hard. But no, the Democratic Party these days tends to be like, okay, now's the time to compromise. And we should be grateful for what we've got. So all of a sudden people are breathing sighs of relief, which is understandable. I'm relieved too. But then saying, oh, thank goodness. I'm going to go take a nap. And in a couple of years, hopefully Biden's figured out. Like people really have this instinctive response. The Republicans don't do this when they barely win. When they barely win with Trump, they're like, okay, let's go full fascism. Let's push it. Some people, we're like, we can't push for justice. That's ridiculous. No, now's the time to come together as one America. And so this is, in this situation, the Republicans still have the most bargaining chips. Like, that's what we don't really get. Like, in a situation where we've already capitulated, Republicans, like, threatening us with stuff has more, like, caused us more concern. So, like, we're in a place where any justice gains we've had, we're likely just to throw people under the bus in order for the Democrats to have power. Like that's kind of what it feels like right now. This is why one of the reasons we're talking about this old timey election and reflecting upon how this is a predictable outcome.
Yeah. Yeah. And so essentially, you know, what this quote compromise did in 1877 was to backtrack on what the Civil War was all about, right? And so, for the purpose of maintaining white hegemony. And so, on the one hand, there are all these people right now who are saying, oh, you know, don't worry, Biden's going to get in, everything's going to be fine. Maybe that's true. But then what's also interesting to me is that every time I read one of those articles, there's somewhere in it where there's some line like, well, but there is one other thing they could do. Right. Clearly these people are talking about this 24/7. I mean, that's all they're working on. That's all they're thinking about. And as we've seen these 3 months go by, at each point where it's been like, okay, well, that's it, right? So, okay, so the courts threw all these things out. Well, that's it. The elections got certified. Well, that's it. The Supreme Court threw this case out. Well, that's it. Oh, the Electoral College voted. Well, that's it. It hasn't been it, right? It's never it.
we act as though our society, this is another myth, that somehow our society is determined by and bound by the rule of law. Which I'm like, laws don't apply to everyone the same way. Like, it's just there as a nice, like, it's good to have them. But at the end of the day, whoever has the most power and can use it in the most clever fashion wins. And let's just be honest, the Republicans are better or more adept at using power than the Democrats are. And both are more adept and have way more power than any other, than the left. Like the leftists, we have hardly any power. So that's why we're always having to compromise the hell out of our convictions in order to get anything done. Republicans show that they don't have to compromise much at all because they're just better at just, and more willing to use power in nefarious ways. And we need to understand that. Which we don't, apparently. We don't. It's like this version of like, well, now Trump has got to stop. It reminds me of all those times like, now Trump's done it. Like, now the Republicans are here for what he is, and we're going to see the fracturing of the Republican Party into two parties. Like, I've heard this for the last 4 years, and I'm like, no. Republicans don't stay Republicans purely out of ideals. That's nice that you think that.
All right, we got some comments. Let's get you all in on this.
Some numerology.
Yes.
From Juiced and from CK. 42 is really the only number we have to worry about, according to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Elizabeth says, whoa, too much time in your hands, Dan. Lol. And then Adam is pulling a page out of Pythagoras here and saying everything is math. But moving on from the math stuff, Kathleen writes, my mother had an epiphany yesterday, which epiphany's today, Kathleen.
Right.
She said, Trump lost and should stop this nonsense. She might change her mind today, but still it gives me hope. That is actually encouraging.
That's great. Right. And so to pull epiphany into all of this, in all seriousness, and what I really like about the Christian calendar, and you know, it is interesting to me when I encounter folks from traditions that don't really have the Christian calendar, and so they haven't kind of looked at the year and time that way. Is that, you know, how we structure time is also a mythology or a worldview, right? So, you know, we're all like back to school in September and nobody works between Christmas and New Year. And, you know, so other than the seasons and other than astronomy, anything else we create in terms of how we structure time is just that. It's a structure, it's a construct. And so to have this kind of sacred, supposedly, construct of time, I just find to be really interesting and helpful to kind of keep coming back to. And so Epiphany, right, is this moment where the wise men they see something new, right? They see this new thing. And so the word epiphany, like, has come to mean we have this, you know, moment of realization. So Kathleen's mother may have had a moment of realization yesterday. And so it comes to be this time of talking about kind of waking up and seeing how things are, having a new understanding of things that send us on another way, right? That's what they say about the wise men. They went home another way, right? They were changed. And, you know, if you do the spiritual practice of the labyrinth, that's the whole idea behind the labyrinth. You take this journey into the center where you have this union with God, and then you come out back into the world and changed in some way, shape, or form. And, you know, each time you do that, it's not necessarily a big kind of epiphany, but it's meant to represent and remind us of that process of the spiritual life. And so, you know, each time when we have one of these crises, and we've talked so much about the pandemic as apocalyptic and revealing, when we have these crises, hopefully we have epiphanies, right? Hopefully we learn something. Hopefully it kind of opens us up to some new way of being and functioning. or we have the option of just closing down and doing the same stuff again, but going back to sleep. But at least it's something to be reminded of. Mm-hmm. All right, more comments.
CK writes, isn't reconstruction a lesson held on to today by government? It seems to me that if you want to fix things, we see it can be done, for example, reconstruction. But and to me, I'm not exactly sure where you're going with that, but
yeah,
there's a positive. Reconstruction shows the possibilities, and it also shows the disappointments, like that whole era of history. I mean, again, the other thing is, like, part of the reason that people, like, the myth around capitulation and compromise is that maintaining unity was more important than liberation. Like, that's one way of interpreting this, like, bringing the powerful people back together is more important than just one group of people having something like justice. And we're seeing that this is always the question in our society when it comes to the powerful. What's more important, justice or the powerful maintaining their grip in a way that is conciliatory with other powerful people? Gus writes, after the kerfuffle, wonderful word by the way, of HBO almost running the alternative history show Confederacy, I wish I could have seen that. That would have been interesting. I realized how many alt history stories there are around us winning the Civil War, the South winning the Civil War. I asked our librarian, who focuses on speculative fiction, for a book on Reconstruction really taking hold. She was saying it hasn't been written. What?
A speculative fiction book. I see.
Yeah, like
so I would kind of like a.
Yeah, like what if Reconstruction would have taken hold in advance? Like, I'm right. Surprised there hasn't been a book about that, and I want somebody to write it because of the myriad kind of examples of history. What if things would have gone this way instead of that? Reconstruction is one of the more fascinating glimpses into what America could be. So I'd love to see that. Adam writes, people will be thrown under the bus and the Democrats will still compromise while in power to the detriment of justice and equality. That seems likely.
Well, seems likely. And you know, to me, this is one thing now that we've had the Senate runoff. And so now the Democrats control the Senate, which, you know, I understand that there are conservative Democrats that are not going to support certain bills and certain agendas. However, the basic ability to at least get things on the Senate floor, right, which is, you know, and I mean, the fact that the Senate works that way, right, that you can have one person that can completely stop any agenda from getting on the floor, I mean, I hope we recognize that that's not exactly democratic. Right? That's pretty totalitarian way of doing things. But anyway, that aside, I mean, to me at this point, there is no excuse for the Biden administration to not be at least pushing some very progressive, very justice-oriented things. There simply is no excuse. And, you know, right now there's a lot of talk about the fracturing of the GOP, but I really feel like if, given that we've now won the Senate, if Biden does not do that, I think the Democratic Party could very well split, because it will become so obvious, right, that you know, because that's what the excuse has been. I mean, we've been hearing that all fall. Well, Mitch McConnell is going to control the Senate, so we can't have progressive cabinet people, and we can't have, you know, progressive agenda. We can't do anything because he's going to hold it all up, so we got to go slow and be careful. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's gone now. So now this is going to be very revealing in terms of these kinds of issues that we're talking about.
Susan says Republicans have already been fractured when the Tea Party was in its heyday. Ideologically, yes, but I mean, functionally, they still toe the party line, which is moving ever
right. Yeah, they're much better at that.
Partly because, yeah, like, to them, like, Republicans are not monolithic, but they are more monolithic than anything left of center, because we have competing constituencies in a way that white masculinity doesn't have competing constituency, and that's the center of Republicanism. So they're willing to go along with anything that moves the needle that way. And so you see this with libertarians all the time, like, well, Republican Tea Party libertarians. Like, you have the pure libertarians that exist apart from these party structures. But within Republicanism, Tea Partiers are still willing to do things that are remarkably not Tea Party-like, so long as they still have kind of the conservative person in power.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's the way that, I mean, look, Republicans have now thrown out any idea of fiscal responsibility. Republicans have now thrown out any idea of states' rights. I mean, it's like, you name it. You know, these guys are willing to chuck any ideological position on moment's notice if it's going to serve them and they're going to keep power.
And it's been telling to see the people who have been, like, we may have thought of as the moderate Republicans in the past, kind of fracturing off and kind of vaguely aligning with the Democrats this time. But still, like, the furthest left you get within the Republican Party right now from any major leader is Mitt Romney, which he's not. He's pretty moderate compared to their other Republicans, but he still goes along with things.
Yeah, exactly.
It's still better for him if the Republicans win than if the Democrats win, even though in a lot of ways he has a lot more in common with Biden than he does with Donald Trump. Maria says if a Democrat had been president, back in the 1877, wouldn't he have withdrawn federal troops anyway? Conceding to withdraw troops was conceding something that would have been lost anyway. Yeah, I look at this as the end of the compromise rather than the beginning. Kind of now, like, the Democrats have already been compromising so much that if there's a compromise that happens now that's to the favor of the Republicans, it wouldn't surprise me. It'd be a culmination of things, just like that. So Reconstruction was already being...
Yeah,
undermined from very early on. And then this 1877 is when we mark the end of it, because it's like, okay, I guess Reconstruction mm-hmm. is actually done now.
Right. Yeah, and the truth is, Maria, that you're very likely right. That still does not justify overthrowing the election. Right? I mean, that's kind of the point here as far as an example for today, is that... you know, what the Republicans did was to essentially overthrow the election and enact a military coup in order to stay in power. And yes, they did what might have been done by the administration anyway, but at least they still got to maintain some political power.
Stefan writes, as someone said, Trump showed how much lack of corruption wasn't based on rule of law, but basically on an honor system.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's what's been exposed by all of this. This whole idea of rule of law is a very, very thin piece of tissue paper that only stays together if the people in power are willing to go on an honor system. Right? I mean, If the GOP had a majority in the House right now, they would overthrow the election.
I have no doubt in my mind about that.
No, I mean, there's no question about it. If this nine people on this, you know, if five people, I mean, right, there's 320 million people in America. If five people on the Supreme Court thought slightly differently, they would overthrow the election. Right. So this notion that our entire system hangs on five people behaving themselves, you know, that does not give me a whole lot of comfort. It really doesn't. All right, let's keep rolling our comments.
Adam writes, I think it's naive to think that the Democrats aren't benefiting from their concessions to conservatism. It's not that they're weak, it's that they're really in on it and benefit from private interests pulling strings on Capitol Hill. Yeah, that's the snow job that they're giving everybody, is acting like we have to for the love of America and for, you know, they just kind of give the stuff, but it's like we know they're kind of all in on it together at a certain level. Oligarchs are going to oligarch. That's kind of how it works. And then they're going to say, oh, my hands are tied. Like it's like a landlord upping rent. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, my hands are tied. It's this economy. I'm like, no, you get to decide how much you charge me for rent. Come on now.
Well, and you want a great example of this, and this is absolutely fascinating. Go look up and do some research about what Obama is doing right now, trying to build this massive monument to himself in Chicago. And he's trying to build this giant tower. And there was actually a federal lawsuit around it because they're trying to dig up this park to do this. And Amy Coney Barrett was the person who heard the case this summer. And she was the one that threw out the activists' lawsuit. So, you know, again, here we have this charade of, oh, there's the Republicans, there's the Democrats, they're on opposite sides. Of course, Obama would hate Amy Coney Barrett, blah, blah, blah. No, they're, you know, yes, there are differences. Yes, there are different ways of looking at some things. But this is why so many activists say that if you're not dealing with economics and you're not dealing with economic disparity, you really cannot be getting at a progressive agenda. Because when push comes to shove, at the end of the day, when a billionaire wants to build a giant tower in a city and tear up a park and destroy a neighborhood, he gets to do that. And the other oligarchs, even if they're of a different party, will help him do that because they're all on the same boards and they're all friends and they all hang out together. And people who are multi-millionaires and billionaires don't hang out with us. They hang out with each other and they protect each other's interests.
You're such a pinko, Dan. Becca writes, moments like this one are why we have checks and balances in our political systems. And yet it doesn't feel like many people value checks and balances or systems of accountability. When I bring up the need for checks and balances, it's often followed by a conversation about trusting people in power. Obviously, we can't just trust power. Power needs boundaries to be healthy.
Yeah. And then, but then even within that, the people who are checking and balancing each other have to be willing to do that. And that's kind of the bottom line issue in any of these situations. You know, are they going to do that? Right. I mean, that's the conversation we're hearing right now. Are the senators and representatives going to abide by the Constitution or not? Now, it's very obvious that there's been no election fraud. And it's very obvious what the people have voted for. You know, are you going to follow that or not?
It's interesting. Like the framers of the Constitution were classist, misogynist, sex, blah, all that stuff. But this, at the same time, they still also had this vague sense that these branches of government would be kind of citizens, like, you know, like a farmer would go off and be in Congress. Like, I don't think they envisioned the idea of like robber barons running everything. So even then, their idea of checks and balance still had a vague sense, as flawed as it was, that the people were directly involved in the checks and balances, but we're not now. Mm-hmm. We get to vote for people that are prearranged for us amongst the ruling class, generally speaking. The House is by far among the major branches and vestiges of our governance. It's the one that's most directly accountable to the people. But even there, we see, like, if you're a poor person, you have to be a celebrity or some kind of weird thing in order to be able to get into the House. That's kind of how it works. You have these rare examples like AOC, but she's the exception. Adam writes, where is David Bowie in all this talk of the labyrinth, Dan? I'm kind of lost here. That was more of a maze than a labyrinth.
All right, we need to keep moving now. We're already over time.
Gus writes, Vox has a great video on the white supremacist coup in North Carolina at the end of Reconstruction and how it really changed the political nature of the state that has repercussions still. There's a link there. Thank you, librarian awesome. Gus.
Yes, Gus, you're accepting your librarian tasks very well.
Stefan writes, where do these comments come from? I don't see them here. That's a good reminder. Like, so this goes live on three different Facebook accounts, on Twitter, which no one comments on Twitter, and then on YouTube. But most of them come from one of three Facebook pages, the Center for Prophetic Imagination page, the Micah page, transmission page, or and my own personal page.
Yeah, so four pages.
Yes. Four pages, so it could happen there. So they all combine together and we post them as we see them, but we don't know where they're coming. Yeah.
This is all meant to confuse the robot birds.
Yeah,
that's why important. We do that.
It's essential.
It's very important.
Yeah. Adam writes, liberals are more interested in appeasing people being a pain in the ass for what they want than being a pain in the ass for what they want. I don't know exactly what that sentence kind of lost me, but that's where liberals really are weak. Though there's also talking the talk of justice and equity and not willing to fight for it because you still benefit from white supremacy and other forms of oppression. So here we are again, lol, just on a more personal level. Yeah, I mean, it's so funny. Like in the 4-year election cycle, you can talk like, you could be upset with the Democratic Party in the first couple of years after, like not right after the election. You have to give them a shot. And then there's like a year and a half sweet spot where you can be critical. And then all of a sudden you have to get in line so that your guy wins. And now you still can't, like, I still can't be really critical of Biden without someone jumping down my throat for being like maybe undermining our chances. Like this is just a weird abusive relationship we're stuck in where no one can complain about injustice. So you're right. Tyler writes, in some ways, I feel like the Democratic establishment almost wanted things to remain stagnant with the Republicans still controlling the House because this would have given them the excuse that nothing can be done.
Yeah, he meant the Senate. Republicans still controlling the Senate. Yeah. The next comment.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, Vincent. Yeah. It's hard for me not to like, generally see that to be the case. And that may be cynical seeming to some of you, but like I have no reason not to be cynical when it comes to this.
Yeah.
Jim writes, so what does this mean for politicized evangelical? Oh, my God. That's a whole other topic.
Like, that's a whole other topic.
I don't know what it means.
Yeah.
We need to take away their toys so that they can. Evangelicalism can only be a good thing if it's powerless. I mean, I'm just going to. The only way an evangelistic tendency can work as if it's coming from a place of not power. Otherwise, it's a form of oppression, and evangelicalism embodies that more than anything else does in this world right now. Even trumping Catholicism for the papa spot when it comes to imperial Christianity. Mark writes, we are being given a brightly illuminated glimpse of the truth that the entire U.S. governmental system exists solely for the protection and accumulation of wealth for those who already have it. Kind of seems, I mean, Marx is right. oligarchs are gonna oligarch, lol. Yeah, right. I only lol to fight back the tears, Julia.
Yes.
Mark writes, keep in mind that quote unquote citizens for the framers of the Constitution were defined as white male property. Yeah, I was trying to allude to that by saying like it's all baked in, but even in their mind, they still had this some weird populist entry point that even that we're not getting. So like it's just. There's some ways in which we've actually advanced in our ability to live out the Constitution, but there's other areas where we've actually fallen behind. And like this myth of progress that things always go from worse to better needs to be seriously interrogated. And we have to look at each thing on its own terms and recognize that things are moving towards the powerful more and more. There's not a strong movement towards the people right now.
No.
Not at least at the U.S. top level of governance. And we should be truthful about that and do things that confront and challenge that. Adam writes, liberals are more interested in appeasing others being a pain in the ass than being a pain in the ass. Yes, there we go. I thought that's where you were going, but I wasn't sure.
All right. Well, we've blazed through another half an hour. Thank you for the great comments. And we will all be very curious what the next 24 hours will bring.
There's Trump is talking right now to some rally in DC. We'll see what happens with that. It's kind of scary.
Yeah. And
this is the burning of the Reichstag moment. I don't know. Who knows?
So we can go forth into this day meditating on the gospel as baby poop.
Yeah. The revelation of God's presence in the weak instead of the strong and powerful. Amen.
All right. See you tomorrow.